Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. A couple nights ago, Saturday night, I gave a talk using the Four Foundations of Mindfulness as the theme, the basis, and we continue that theme, and particularly with concerning meditation. And mindfulness of breathing. When we cultivate mindfulness of breathing, it is of course it's the most common or most frequently taught method of meditation that the Buddha himself gave, and he particularly emphasized the aspect of mindfulness of breathing fulfilling the four foundations of mindfulness, so that. That using of the breath as a object of awareness and attention, but then it is being applied so that we're attending to the experience of the body, the experience of feeling, the experience of the mind, and the experience of the objects of mind or phenomena, dhammas. So that it's one, of course, it's very flexible, but it's also, it gives us something to, or a lot, not just something, but a lot to explore as we're developing our meditation and developing our cultivation of awareness in the meditation, particularly for sitting meditation. So that we can be, so often there's a tendency to, one, and quite rightly, using the language of meditation, is that we're trying to, one, point the mind, or we're trying to concentrate the mind into one point, or we're cultivating a one-pointedness of attention, and of course those are the Buddha used those words, ekagata citta, the which is oftentimes translated as one-pointed, but it's, and there's a couple things to be alert to in terms of how we inherit language and translation and how it affects us. And so that can end up being pretty tight, pretty exclusive, and that's certainly what we're trying to one point the mind. We tend to be trying to exclude experience, especially experience that is maybe distracting or is maybe unsettling in some way, and that I mean certainly there's a certain fair enough kind of logic to it, but it ends up being this idea, trying to establish the mind on a point that excludes and pushes away. Whereas, you know, I think just changing the language of trying to bring the mind to a point that includes our experience. It's a different way of holding attention, so that allowing the, because certainly when the Buddha is giving instruction on mindfulness of breathing and then saying that it includes the experience of body, feeling, mind objects, that's a lot. It's not, you can't be excluding too much, or you can't be separating too much. But that, so that sense of and bringing the mind to a point that is aware, it's alert, and it is attentive to the, yeah, these different ways of experiencing what is arising. And sometimes what is arising is experiences of the body. Sometimes it's an experience of the, say, on a feeling tone, just pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. Sometimes it's experience of the mind, whether it's a mood of desire or a mood of aversion, or a mood of loving kindness, a mood of kind of open generosity feeling, a mood of a real kind of clear analytical investigation in terms of sort of discerning. Sometimes it's confused, it's doubting, it's uncertain. Sometimes it's very expansive. Sometimes it's kind of contracted. All of those are. You can use the object of attention to include that, and so that, and it's still a point. It's like Ajahn Chah's description of when we're meditating or when we're practicing, but in particular in meditation, that if we try too hard to just stop the mind, force the mind onto a point, then it doesn't become happy, it doesn't become settled, it doesn't become steady. All we need to do is he said it's like taking like a chicken, and then in Thailand, oftentimes what they'll do is just a wicker kind of basket that's the weave is very loose and so they can see everything that's going around. But it's a container. It's only about, say, 2-3 feet across, and it's like a bell or a dome. And you throw a bit of rice in there, and that chicken's happy to stay there. It'll wander around a little bit, scratch here, scratch there, but it's there. But if you tried to just get a stake and nail with a string or something and nail it to one point, it'll struggle, it'll fight, it'll resist. And mind is similar. You want to contain it, and you want it to. But you want to give it enough space that it can explore and not feel oppressed. And so with using that, like, mindfulness of breathing with the four foundations of mindfulness and that sense of one-pointed, bringing that one point, having it a point that includes rather than is excluding, is pushing away, is forcing too much, you know, to bring it together into a point. And then the mind will be happy to engage in increasing levels of, as it becomes comfortable with that container, it will be happy to settle further, to become more refined, more peaceful. So just knowing how to relate to the mind skillfully and using the meditation objects in a way that really encourages the mind to settle on its within its object of attention, and which is another word that is in terms of a translation of the one-pointedness of mind. It's sort of sometimes it's translated, and I think more useful is this unification of mind, so that it is unified, and that again is where it's including, it's bringing in these other aspects of experience. And of the body, of attention, of a few, and then it unifies in terms of it's not internally struggling or fighting against itself, but it's unifying, it's settling. So that learning how to use the breath, use that as the underlying thread that ties our experience together of the experience of the body. And we're rooted in the bodily experience. We're certainly aware and attentive to the different aspects of how we experience the body. But there's also this soothing thread of experience, of that rhythm of the breath coming in, the rhythm of the breath going out, and as the mind settles or brings a certain tranquility to that experience, then the experience of the breath changes, and it can be, at first, of course, when it can be this whole rhythm of the breath, experiencing it in the whole body. But then we start to, the mind takes an interest in being more settled or being more content with an experience, at the tip of the nose, or at the abdomen, or a particular point of the body, or just it can express itself, or the experience can just be even necessarily have to be absolutely locked into our anatomical experience of how we conceive of the body, but how we experience it. What is the experience? And how can we inhabit that experience? And with the breath is also like with it's not just sort of air molecules coming into the physical body. I mean, it's also especially with the anapana, that word is also used in, let's say, like Hindu tradition of like a prana, it literally means breath, but it's kind of life force, it's also kind of energy. So it's an energetic, the energetics of existing from one moment to the next is experienced through the breath. But also, so it can be, again, one is not trying to lock into concretizing the breath, and sometimes just being able to experience it, just the energy of that breathing in life and breathing out life, and existing being. And that is mindfulness of breathing. And there's many different ways of approaching that. So this, again, the sense of not getting too locked in, and paying attention to that, that inclusion, unification, allowing the mind, the heart to settle into awareness, alertness, this quality of knowing clearly, and allowing the mind to brighten with that. And so that using the experience of the body, using the experience of feeling, and of course the Buddha, when he's giving the instructions of mindfulness of breathing, the very first instruction that he gives in terms of feeling is experiencing joy, I breathe in, experiencing joy, I breathe out. That's that experience of what is pleasurable, that is, it's joyful, there's a certain exhilaration that one feels in a very positive way. And because that's very, one, it's very uplifting, it's very brightening to the mind, it's energizing to the body and the mind, and to paying attention to that. And the Buddha then moves into a bit more analytical experiencing terms that citta sankhara, the formations of the mind, the mental formations of the mind, the constructs of the mind, the building blocks of the mind. What is it that constructs the mind? And that is that feeling and perception. Those are fundamental to the mind. We don't. Every mind moment has a feeling tone. It has a kind of memory, association, perception. I mean, these are all mushed together. They're not. That's a particular function, a sanya, the ability to have associative memory. That's how we perceive things. We have a name for it. We have a label for it. But it's there. But it's important to experience that, to know it, to be sensitive to that, and because that's what starts the ball rolling in terms of our proliferation, whether it's analytical thought, whether it's visual imagery, or whether it's the moods of the mind, they arise out of pretty fundamental and simple building blocks. That feeling, tone, and perception. So to be able to investigating, being sensitive to, being discerning how that works, what we call mind and what we make out of all that, it's not that complicated. I mean, of course, it ends up complicated, but it doesn't begin that way. And to be able to come back to that root. And when we do that, we start to experience this thing we call mind. We're sensitive to the mind in a very different way. Because usually whatever mood we have, it's always, that's my mood. I'm feeling, this is my thoughts. This is my mood. This is my opinion. But it's just seeing it more in a causal process. And that allows us to not get so entangled. It's not pushing away, it's not excluding, but it's by being settled within that, with having a point of, say, of unification, where there's a stability and a settled quality, the mind doesn't just follow impulsively with the impressions that arise. That's why it's important to settle, to relax, to have this experience of well-being, because then we can be content within that experience of well-being. This is one of the things that we're gladdening the mind I breathe in, gladdening the mind I breathe out, giving oneself that attention, the Pali words abhipamodayam, pamoja is like delight. And api is an amplifier, so it's like, this is, it's not sort of low-level delight. This is, you know, you're gladdening the mind and enjoying that process of just breathing in, breathing out, being present with that, the whole experience of body, of mind. It's allowing the mind to settle, allowing the mind to release its habits of just following likes and dislikes, following the moods of confusion or restlessness, getting caught in dullness, and that's a liberating quality. We're liberating the mind, giving it the opportunity to see clearly, see itself clearly, see the experience clearly, see the world clearly. And it's and then that's where the Buddha transitions into the last section of Dhammas, of phenomena. That's anicca anupassana, investigating or seeing clearly, seeing deeply, impermanence, seeing deeply, experiencing clearly, impermanence as I breathe in, as I breathe out, allowing that to be an object of attention. And that internalizing, and it's not just an intellectual labeling, that's impermanent. It's a letting it come into the heart and settle. Oh, this is impermanent. This is uncertain. This is a not sure experience. This is changing. This is arising and is ceasing, and it's everything. And it's not. And to a certain extent, it might, especially from the sense of self or the sense of our habitual desires and biases, that could be really unsettling. But when it's experienced or seen from this place of inclusion and an interest in truth, then it's liberating. There's this incredible feeling of spaciousness and light arise. But when we turn our attention in certain ways, it lends itself to a releasing and the Buddha makes it explicit in the discourse that viraga anupassana, that seeing, experiencing a dispassion or fading away, and it's a fading away of the impulses of the mind. It's not a fading away of awareness and the quality of knowing clearly. It's not a fading away of a deep contentment with truth. That opens the space for it. So those contemplating contemplating impermanence, anicca, contemplating dispassion, contemplating cessation, ceasing, allowing things to cease, contemplating relinquishment, and patinisaga is a relinquishment, but it's a letting go. It's of the self program, a letting go of that, the I making, the mind making, that the program of propping up the sense of me. And when we are relinquishing that, each in breath, and again the breath is the anchor, the thread of continuity, and we can release into the sense of things being as they are. It's like Lumpo Samedo's refrain of, it's like this, it's like this. And because the mind's always going out trying to either agreeing, disagreeing, wanting, not wanting, liking, disliking, but to come back to this a clear experience, it's like this. And then the breath coming in, the breath going out, the experience of the moment as it is. And that it opens, this is what opens the doorways into the experience of a cessation of suffering, an ending of our propensity to complicate things. And that's it's one of the, I think the Buddha, when talking of the qualities that arise from practice and to know when the mind, our experience, is according with Dhamma, and that's that sense of nipapancha, just non-proliferation, non-complication. And when the mind delights in non-complication, that's a quality that's to be delighted in. There's still the experience of the body, feeling, mind, and mind objects, but it's from a very different place. This is the practice of meditation, the cultivation of this path. Of course, the Buddha gave us these tools, these teachings, and it's up to us to cultivate them, to develop them, to make much of them, to offer that for reflection this evening.